This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
Giant robots smashing into other giant robots.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Giant Robots Smashing into Other Giant Robots podcast. My name is Ben Orenstein, and I'm here today with Peter Reinhardt. How's it going, Peter?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah, so let's see. I usually walk into work. It's about a half-hour walk downhill in San Francisco through the fog. Then I have a stand-up desk, so sort of get to work answering emails. And then actually quite a few meetings. As the CEO of Segment.io, I do a lot of sales and stuff like that. So we have our conference room is actually a closet.
Mm-hmm.
The moment, which is pretty fun. Yeah. But so we take a lot of sales calls in there and then do on-sites around San Francisco. So it's pretty fun. Get to see the insides of a lot of very cool companies and learn a lot about how they work. So it's pretty fun.
So do you see your job as CEO as mainly like chief salesperson at this point?
It's really a mix of everything right now. Mm-hmm. Sales is always a big part of a startup. You're always trying to close more.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's probably my primary responsibility is cash flow, right? So making sure that the business stays operational and that everything is growing.
Sure. So can you give us the elevator pitch for Segment.io for people that haven't heard of it?
Yeah, absolutely. So we basically help route analytics data to all the different tools that companies use to analyze it. So most online companies will use sort of a cocktail of different tools. They'll use a handful of advertising pixels and conversion pixels like Facebook and Google AdWords. They'll use sort of a top of the funnel analytics tool like Google Analytics or something to sort of analyze where traffic is coming from and how much traffic there is. They'll use a mid funnel tool like Mixpanel or Kissmetrics to analyze how people are actually interacting with the product. And they'll often also use like a push notification tool or an email tool like Customer.io to sort of drive retention. And it turns out that all those different services rely on the same data, which is who is the user and what are they doing. So what we make it, we have an API, and it makes it very easy for someone to track who is the user and what are they doing, and then we forward and route and transform that data off to all these services. So it saves developer time so that someone can install once and then route anywhere, and it gives them the flexibility of toggling these different tools on and off at will.
Mm. Well, my favorite analogy for this is that it's sort of like the adapter pattern for analytics.
Yeah, exactly. It's basically a layer of indirection between you know, the tools that use the data and the way in which you sort of ideally want to record them.
Mm-hmm. So once I've got everything wired up and instrumented, I can actually just literally click on services in your dashboard and you start funneling information that direction.
Exactly. You drop in the API key and hit on and the data starts flowing. There's not just it's not just a matter of routing. There's a small transformation. So, for example, Mixpanel might have a $ sign up is like the sign up event, whereas Customer.io it might be signed_up, and so mm-hmm. we know how to do those transformations so that developers don't need to pay attention to those details.
Mm-hmm. And I should mention that we actually are customers, and we're liking it so far. We felt the pain before of switching and adding and removing analytics code, so this seemed like a good idea.
You guys have a pretty cool site, I guess, that has sort of like the guide, the Thoughtbot guide.
Yeah. Are you referring to the playbook?
Yeah, exactly. It was. Thank you guys for the mention in there. That's we've gotten some customers out of that, so I appreciate it.
Oh, awesome. Yeah. No, we're happy to recommend things that we like and that have worked well for us. So, are you involved on the tech side of things?
I was more originally. I still do some programming day to day, but that's mostly around like dashboards and internal tools and stuff like that. I guess the company was founded by three engineers, me and two of my roommates from MIT, and then a designer who's become more of an engineer over the years from Rhode Island School of Design. And, so originally it was the four of us doing engineering all day. And then, once we started getting customers, it turns out that engineering is only about 50% of the problem.
Right, totally.
These days, I don't spend that much time engineering.
Do you miss that?
I do, yeah. It turns out that an engineer never really gives up being an engineer. So now I just get out my engineering wiggles on the weekend, sort of hacking on things, usually internal tools and metrics. But during the week, there's not a lot of time between sales meetings to work on that stuff.
Right, that makes sense. So what does your tech stack look like?
It's basically all Node. So Node.js and Express.js is the server. Though we're playing around a little bit more recently with Koa.js. There's actually two parts of our infrastructure. There's the API itself, and then there's the app that people use to control which things are turned on. And the app itself is a website running on Express. The API stack is a little different. Basically, there's a Elastic Load Balancer on AWS, and then there's sort of a stack of API servers that go into a message queue, and then there's another stack of ingestion servers that take the data off of the queue and then forward that data on to all of the other services that we can route data to.
Have there been interesting scaling or technical challenges that you guys had to overcome?
Yeah, the most interesting or most problematic thing is when customers do batch imports. So, you know, most of the time we're recording hundreds of events a second, and then you'll get or thousands of events a second, and then you'll get a batch import of a couple thousand events a second. So suddenly your load can, for a 10-minute period, can quadruple. So it's been interesting to figure out how to build the queuing system is actually what saves us there, and then we can sort of buffer that queue.
Are you familiar with Rich Hickey by any chance?
No, I'm not.
Okay, so he's the author of Clojure. One of his favorite things is, he says one of his favorite design questions is, can we put a queue between these things? Like one of those fundamental things.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, early on, we weren't really sure why we needed a queue there, but it seemed like a good idea. And that saved us a lot of times.
Sometimes those design decisions early on can be huge.
Yeah, the other solution I've seen to it is just to have the API servers, the API endpoint, basically just write to disk and then process it slower. But we, with the queuing system, we actually have like a faster response time. So it's usually like a couple hundred milliseconds in terms of turnaround from when it hits our API to when it goes onwards to the analytics service.
So does it stay in memory then in the queue?
Yes.
Okay. Makes sense. So how old is the company at this point?
So the company is almost 3 years old, actually. It has a bit of a history. We actually started, the four co-founders actually stopped out of MIT and RISD in 2011 as juniors. So we all had 1 year left. And then we were actually working on a real-time lecture tool for the classroom. So it was like a thing for university classrooms because, you know, we were university students and that's what we knew. We worked on that for about 4 months, raised a seed round coming out of Y Combinator. The problem was that selling into universities was extremely difficult. And so we pivoted in the fall of 2011 to work on something more akin to Google Analytics or Mixpanel. It's not really a pivot. That's more of like a 360, I guess.
Sure.
So then we worked on that for a year. And we, at some point, had this idea. I guess it was when we were building the real-time lecture tool. We actually had this idea for building this sort of layer of indirection for ourselves. So we built this thing called Analytics.js. And basically what it did is it could route data to Kissmetrics, Mixpanel, and Google Analytics, and that was it. And, you know, we used it ourselves, and then at some point we decided to open source it as a way to get customers for our new Google Analytics competitor. So we added a fourth option, which was the old Segment.io. And so we put it on GitHub, and it basically just started accreting people. People just started starring it on GitHub, started using it, started submitting pull requests. And in December of 2012... my co-founder, Ian, sat us all down and he said, guys, I think there's a big idea. I think there's a big business behind this. And I thought quietly to myself, that's the worst idea I've ever heard. and I didn't tell him that. And I went home and I thought to myself, what is the fastest way I can kill this idea so that we stay focused on our core business, which is this Google Analytics competitor? So I came back in the next day and I said, guys, let's launch it on Hacker News and see what happens. Because I figured it'll go straight to the bottom and then we'll be done with it.
Right.
We put it on Hacker News and went straight to the top. I got like 2,000 stars on GitHub in the first couple of days. And I was proven totally, totally wrong. So that was the beginning. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. We added server-side integrations, added mobile SDK. But yeah, it was kind of an interesting thing that from the beginning, it had to prove its worth because I was so skeptical of it.
Yeah. It's interesting because you hear, I've heard the story of like, oh, we built this thing for ourselves and it ended up being popular and we turned it into a product. And that's how it started. But I love this bit where, like, you built it for yourself but thought, you know, this was a terrible business idea.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was horrible. Over the past year, I've come to understand that it's actually very exciting. But but yeah, initially I was not a fan.
Yeah. So how do you feel that the company's going?
I think it's going really well. We have about 3,500 customers now. It's about 1 year in. Recording billions of events a month. So everything's going really well. And in terms of product direction, it's really exciting. The team has grown from 4 to 11 now. 7 engineers and you know, marketing and sales as well. So yeah, it's going to be a really exciting year. I can talk a little bit about the sort of product direction if that's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to hear it.
So right now we take in data from one source, which is like a website or a mobile app. But that's really only like one customer touch point. If you think about it, there's lots of others. It could be a payment system or a help desk or a support tool or an email service provider. There's many places where you're generating data about your customers. And for the most part, that data remains siloed in all those different tools. And so one of the things that we can do is using the webhooks that those services offer or injecting an email pixel or something, we'll be able to pull in the data from all those sources and then route it back out again to all the tools where you actually want to do the analysis. So right now we're sort of fanning out to end services, but at some point we'll actually do M services in to end services out.
Oh, interesting. You can get at the data that I send you, right? Like I can get a backup of what I've fired down the wire to you guys?
Yeah, exactly. So we store a raw log of the data. This is interesting because in the analytics space, the analytics vendors actually have a pretty vested interest in locking in your data. They don't want to make it easy for you to leave, right? So the idea, they're happy to build a batch import API, but not a batch export API. So
right.
Part of us granting our customers flexibility is in storing the raw data and making it very easy to export. So we store, there's actually two ways to get it out. One is in real time via webhooks. So you can put in an arbitrary server endpoint and forward the data onto that. Or you can get the access to the raw logs in S3.
That's very cool. So how do you and your co-founders get along?
It's an interesting question. So I lived with them for about 4 years, or we all lived together. Actually, the other three guys still live together. I got married, so I moved out. Yeah, I think actually the living together, I think, was a key thing that helped us through some of the harder times as a company. And I had lived with the guys from MIT for basically 3 years before that. You know, there's a certain like startup mantra of like living, I guess, cheaply and so forth. There was one thing. We kept our burn rate really low for the first 2 years. Well, it's still pretty low. But the one thing that we splurged on was a nice living space and office space. And I actually think that was more important than we give it credit, because it meant that the place that we were working all day long every day was the nicest place that we had access to. And so there was no reason to leave or to want to leave. So it kind of established a bit of a barrier to like giving up, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Plus there's the sort of social contract of four best friends.
Right. And probably helped you with recruiting a bit too.
Yeah. Well, actually, you know, when we started growing the team, we moved to a real office here in Soma, partly just because the apartment was a bit far from central lines of transportation. But yeah, you're based in Boston, right?
We are, yeah. Do you miss the city?
I do sometimes, yeah.
Do you have any regrets about leaving MIT?
No, MIT is actually very gracious about the whole thing. They, for all of us, they said, come back, you know, as long as you show us that you were doing something interesting, you can come back anytime in the next 10 years. So I actually credit MIT quite a lot with being very like forgiving and understanding of someone wanting to do something that had sort of a natural timing to it.
Yeah, makes sense.
So I may go back at some point when it's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. If you had to put money on it right now, you think you will?
How much money?
$1,000.
I don't know. I could see it as a useful transition at some point to go back and and be in that kind of environment.
It's funny, after you get that sort of initial shot at it, it feels like a luxury, right? At the idea of like, I'll take a year off and just study stuff and learn things. It's like, wow, you're such a lucky guy to get to go do that.
Totally. That was actually something that surprised me coming out of college and going straight into a super focused startup environment was the idea of working on the same thing every day. You know, in college, you work on like 10 things a day and it rotates throughout the semester. So you're constantly doing new things. And, you know, startup is kind of the opposite of that. You kind of do exactly the same thing every day.
And
at least for a couple months, and then your job description changes. But
right. Do you miss that change?
I think I did. I think now that, for the first 2 years, you know, quite honestly, we were failing. And so for those 2 years, our job description didn't change and it was pretty much the same thing every day. Now that the company is doing better, things actually are changing. So every couple of months I have a new job description and that's very fun because I'm constantly learning something new.
Do you have any specific things about yourself that you're trying to improve on?
Yeah. One thing is sort of like humility and patience. Mm. I think part of the reason that we failed for the first 2 years was because we believed too strongly in our own ideas. Mm. In particular, I believed sort of blindly in like a abstract idea that something we're building had to be right and was best for the world. Mm. And I kind of reject the idea now, maybe partly because of the experience with Analytics.js, that I have any idea what's right for the world. So like having more humility and patience when listening to the customers and really anybody, I think, is something that I learned the hard way over the past 2 years. Hopefully something that I can continue getting better at.
Hmm. Do you have any particular goals for the company beyond the sort of many inputs, many outputs?
Yeah, there's some specific features that I'm not quite ready to talk about.
Okay.
I think that there's some interesting dynamics in the analytics industry that I hope will change as more people start to use SegmentO. So one thing is it takes about $500,000, maybe $2 million to build the ingestion service to power an analytics company. So when you think about a Mixpanel or a Kissmetrics or a Track.io or a Customer.io, in terms of engineering time, it costs somewhere between $500,000 and $2 million to build the infrastructure required to process the data that's coming in.
Huh.
And part of the challenge there is that you have to scale to your biggest customer immediately.
Hmm.
And the problem with that is that the people who have the best ideas about what to do with the data are, analysts and people who don't necessarily have the computer science background to know how to build that infrastructure. And so I think there's a lot of friction in the marketplace that gets introduced because the people who know the best thing to do with the data don't actually necessarily have the skills or resources to build out the products that do that. And even if they did, there's a huge upfront cost to building that out for maybe even a niche application or a niche market that they could sell it to.
Hmm.
So in terms of a longer vision, I hope that Segmentio basically introduces some more efficiency to that marketplace and makes it much cheaper to build that kind of tool, because you don't need to build all the SDKs. Maybe you don't even need to build an API. Maybe you can just take in the raw data from Segmentio.
Mm.
So I hope that it introduces a little more flexibility and efficiency into the analytics marketplace.
Yeah, it's interesting to be creating a business and working on a business that's, in a way, is fundamental goal is more efficiency. I really like that. It's like we're going to prevent you from needing to rewrite analytics integrations over and over again.
Yeah, well, and the other interesting thing is that I believe that the analytics market is fundamentally niche-y. That, for example, if you try to think about a generically useful analytics tool, it's not that it works for a lot of people, but it's not hugely valuable to any particular company, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you think at the extreme opposite end, you have a company that's built their entire analytics infrastructure in-house. They spent millions of dollars on the analytics team to build it out, say a Facebook. It's hugely valuable to them, but it only works for Facebook.
Right.
And so if you think about the ideal tool is gets more and more niche-y. And so right now, because of these infrastructure problems, people are trying to address big markets. Whereas I think really what's best for the end customer is if they didn't have to build all that infrastructure and everyone could target many niche markets. The analytics tool that's best for a mobile game is completely different than what's best for an enterprise e-commerce company.
Mm-hmm. But and you're preventing them from having to keep repaying that integration cost?
Well, hopefully there's some kind of marketplace where an analyst could build the ideal report or ideal dashboard for a mobile game. And an analyst could build separately the ideal report for a major e-commerce company without having to rebuild the entire infrastructure underneath both times.
Right. Okay. I gotcha. So what are your outside interests beyond your work? I know I've seen a lot of posts and whatnot from you on nuclear reactors.
Yeah, that's funny. I was meeting with an investor the other day and he sat down and he said, I was Googling thorium reactors and your name came up or your blog came up. And so I read through it. And then I realized that I had a meeting with you this week talking about analytics and I got really confused. I sort of have a passion for nuclear reactors or at least for trying to understand them. There's what you're probably mentioning in the blog articles there was a reactor developed in the 1970s called the molten salt reactor. Mm-hmm. And I got really into it, reading about it last fall, read a bunch of papers about it and so forth. And it turns out that development of the reactor mostly stopped for political reasons, but it had a lot of promise technically. And I know there's a number of efforts at MIT and in China in particular to start development of that technology again. So that's super exciting and really interesting.
Mm-hmm. What, anything else besides nuclear reactors?
I do enjoy hiking around San Francisco. The Marin Headlands are beautiful here. I actually had a fun experience last year. Went to Germany for a cousin's wedding, and I had seen this picture of a rock in Norway. It's sort of a diving board rock. It's about 3,000 feet up from the floor of a fjord there. And so I'd seen the picture online. I decided that we absolutely had to go visit it. So my wife and I went to Norway, hiked about 20 miles, and went out on this diving board of rock. It's crazy. It sticks about 30 feet out over this 3,000-foot cliff.
Wow.
It's totally wild. It's called Troll Tunga, if you want to check it out.
Huh. Cool. We'll have to link to that in the show notes. So what would you do if you had to leave Sigma-Nao?
If I had to leave?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very fun.
Yeah. Or imagine that, you know, it's 10 years from now and you want a new thing.
It's an interesting question. That might be a good time to go back to MIT. I don't know. I was actually studying aerospace engineering at MIT, so I would probably be very interested in doing something back in the aerospace engineering world, or perhaps nuclear engineering. I'm not sure. I don't spend a whole lot of time thinking about it. I'm mostly walk to work, think about data, and walk home.
Fair enough. Well, then I think we can just leave it right there.
Cool. Sounds good.
Awesome. Well, I really appreciate you dropping by and chatting.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. So if you'd like to access the show notes for this episode, you can go to thoughtbot.com/giantrobots/86. Thanks for listening.